Welcome to Desert Island Strips. I'm your host, Nasty Canasta, and my castaway on the island today likes drinking cocktails, which he's mixing up right now, all kinds of music, classic movies, and changing into fancy clothes and going out after a long day of work. He runs a club for just that and a magazine that celebrates it, and he is making...
Rye Old Fashions. We're doing Rye Old Fashions.
In his lovely apartment in Queens. So please welcome to the island, Don Spiro.
Hi. I guess pretty much that sums me up. I think that interview is kind of over because you just put it all in a nutshell right there. That's exactly who I am.
So you trained in filmmaking.
Yes.
And you do camera work and set lighting for film and TV in New York and L.A. But I think most of us know you best, or at least met you first, as a photographer, as a burlesque photographer. So how did you get into still photography and burlesque photography?
Well, I'd always been a still photographer ever since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I always loved shooting film. We'd go on family vacations, and I was always the one to grab the camera from my dad and take all the pictures. And then all through college, as a hobby, I still did photos. And then when I graduated, I went to work in the film industry, and I had a lot of friends who were in the film, entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And I would take their pictures when I was between jobs for their albums or posters or what have you. And several of my friends started doing burlesque. They were in a burlesque troupe. And I started doing pictures for that burlesque troupe, and that was the Velvet Hammer.
Was that your first sort of falling into the burlesque world, as it were?
Somewhat. I'd always been interested in it because my girlfriend at the time, ever since high school, was Penny Starr Jr. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother is Penny Starr Sr.
Yes, she is.
So I remember even in high school when... she was on stage crew, mm-hmm. and everybody in the theater troupe had to do some kind of performance. She actually did a striptease.
Oh, so shut
she
up.
Was, I think, 16 or 17. That was in the middle 80s or something. So burlesque was always kind of in the background. I was always into the cocktail scene, the lounge and tiki mm-hmm. and retro scene in the 80s and 90s, especially in Los Angeles. So there's a big crossover with burlesque.
Absolutely. Talk me through this beverage you're making.
This is a Rye Old Fashioned, and I'm doing a little bit of an experiment. I like, my favorite rye to use in a Sazerac is actually a combination of Old Overholt and Rittenhouse rye. And I don't have Rittenhouse, but I have Old Overholt and I've got Templeton rye, so I'm going to try... an old fashioned just with a blend of the two of those.
Excellent.
And it's just going to be that, some simple Boker's bitters, not muddling any cherries or anything like that. This is the real, like, old fashioned where it's basically whiskey and bitters and not nothing else except ice.
Giant ice cubes, I was just going to say. Which I have learned in recent years that that's how you do it.
It depends on the cocktail. For this, I prefer it because it chills it, but it doesn't water it down too much. Mm-hmm. And when it does water down, it is kind of slow. So here's yours.
Thank you.
And as it waters down, it changes the flavor profiles mm-hmm. just a little bit. So it's a little bit of an experiment here. Cheers.
Sorry.
To you. I like that. It's kind of
me.
Light, but it's a little more mellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell me about the first performers that you would bring to the island, the first act.
Well, I have so many performers that I wanted to bring that mm-hmm. I had to really give myself a criteria to knock it down. And basically, kind of, I felt like I was curating a show.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. Okay. Oh, I appreciate that.
So if you're going to have a show, you need to have somebody doing pickup, mm-hmm. of course, which I know in New York they call that stage kittening. Mm-hmm. They call it different things other places. Oh. And I've heard different things. A lot of people also just call them maids, and that comes from my experience with the Velvet Hammer, mm-hmm. where we had the Poubelle twins, Bibi and Fifi, who are twins, mm-hmm. French maids, and they would come out between acts. So I would suggest if I had my druthers to bring, Bibi Poubelle as the stage maid, because if you're going to have somebody being a stage maid or pickup or a stage kitten, I figure you'd have the best. And a lot of people don't realize that she invented it.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, the first person to do it was her sister, Fifi. Mm-hmm. But the next show, it was both of them. And they don't just get out there and kitten. Mm-hmm. They are an act unto themselves.
That's fantastic.
They have more stage time than most people, and they know it. And when they were doing things with Ms. Astrid hosting, they did lots of little bits, and their personalities really kind of showed through. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would start going to shows just to see them.
That's
as the stage kittens. Kind of like Miss Astrid's maids, and they were rude, and they didn't listen to her, and they didn't like the audience.
Astrid, yeah,
and they didn't speak. Mm-hmm. They didn't speak. If they spoke, they would only whisper to each other in French.
That's fantastic. Do you have any idea what happened before that? Like, I know back in the old days, a lot of times the legends, I mean, they've said they'd mm-hmm. hand their costumes off stage to
they would hand
their
costumes off
the
stage, yes, to somebody in the wings, or they would I talked to a few of them, they would have furniture, props and things, and they would drape it on the prop.
Right.
But one thing that they said they would never do, that new burlesque performers do, is they never let their clothing touch the floor. So they didn't need the stage kittens, because mm-hmm. their clothing never landed on mm-hmm. the floor like ours do.
So back to the Poubelle twins,
yes.
They also, they do lucha,
yes.
It seems, according to their website, which I was totally not stalking all over yesterday. But
I would definitely stalk their website.
Tell me
absolutely.
About Lucha Vavoom, because this is not a thing that I think certainly a lot of New Yorkers are exposed to specifically, or even sort of the concept of it.
Yes, it's come to New York a few times, mm-hmm. And they're trying to bring it back again. It's such a spectacle mm-hmm. that it's hard to find the right venue mm-hmm. For it in New York, other than maybe Madison Square Garden or somewhere.
Right.
It's been at Webster Hall a few times, but it's traveled through Chicago mm-hmm. and San Francisco and Vegas, but its home is really the Mayan Theater
right.
in Los Angeles. And it's a combination of actual lucha libre, Mexican wrestlers, mm-hmm. And burlesque. And it's gotten to the point now where there's such a mix between the two, it's become this, its own thing. Mm-hmm. It's a mix of cabaret and vaudeville and circus, and it's gone beyond just burlesque mm-hmm. and Mexican wrestling. It's really lucha vavoom. It's the only way to describe it.
Yeah.
It is a perfect fit.
Yeah.
And one of the best things about, because I've been shooting it for a little over 12 years now. Mm-hmm. Originally, they would bring up some of the big names from Mexico. But once the bigger names started signing with other companies like WWF
right.
and got under exclusive contracts, they couldn't come up and just do other shows.
Right.
So a lot of the performers who were from Texas and other places who were performing at Lucha Vavoom started really making names for themselves. Mm. And now people go to see Cassandro, who's just... He's known as the Queen of the Ring. He's mm-hmm. fantastic. And the Crazy Chickens, and El Jimador, and the Poubelle twins, when they first joined Lucha Vavoom, when they had more free time in their personal lives, they began Mexican wrestling. And like everything else, they take everything very seriously,
mm-hmm.
and would train several times a week for years. I remember Bibi actually went down for a month or a month and a half to live with a family in Oaxaca, Mexico. That
wow.
was a Mexican wrestling family. That's what they did, was train people.
That's fantastic.
So she went down there for a month just to train. And they're both ranked in Mexico. They would go down over the border to fight in Mexico.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, they're actually the real deal. They're not some people just putting on a costume and
right.
pretending to wrestle. They actually know what they're doing.
And their slapping booth?
Oh, yes.
What is that?
Well, this is one of the most brilliant concepts that's so simple that you think, oh, it's so obvious. Why didn't I think of that? One year, Penny Starr Jr. was doing a, I think it was, might have been a benefit for Hurricane Katrina, I'm not sure. And she invited the Pubell twins to perform, and they wanted to do something different. And instead of doing a kissing booth to raise money, because they're the Pubells, they decided to do a slapping booth to raise money. And it was so popular that they've done it many, many times since at other shows and other benefits. And depending on how much you are willing to pay, it determines how hard they'll slap you or where they'll slap you.
Oh, wow.
But the slapping booth is, for me, it's so Pubell.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly, it fits in with everything the Pubell twins do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So in your experience as absolutely bi-coastal, I mean, you are never in New York enough, but,
Oh, thank you.
What do you think, what characterizes, if anything, the sort of differences and or similarities between New York and LA burlesque?
Well, I think every city has its own differences. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed this in Seattle and Chicago and other cities. They all have their own brand of burlesque.
Right.
And it's becoming homogenized in a way that I kind of like, in that New York and LA are both becoming, they're cross-pollinating.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of New Yorkers just being a New York show, now it's got so much more variety now.
Right.
There's a lot of people who go to Exotic World and see shows and go, oh, I can do that. How can I do that in my town?
Exactly.
But traditionally, New Yorkers have the background of working in smaller venues.
Mm-hmm.
So they can only bring to their show what they can carry on the subway or fit on the stage, which is also extremely small. California tends to have bigger venues.
Mm-hmm.
And people in L.A., everyone drives a car,
yeah.
So you can fit things in your car, your trunk, or whatever, and you have more space, and the weather's better
mm-hmm.
year-round. Other things I'd say would be that New York has a theater and performance art background.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of performers do not come from a dance background, which is a fairly new thing. You have people like Pearl Noir coming to New York, Sydney Devereaux coming to New York, so there's a big mix. But New York still has that tradition of theater and performance art.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I moved here, in Los Angeles and San Francisco, they would always talk about burlesque dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And New York, if you look up at the Village Voice or Time Out, it talks about burlesque performers.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to me, is a huge difference between L.A. and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go by other cities, like Chicago's got, well, Michelle L'Amour, who has a whole army of people that she's trained who can perform on a giant stage and who can do choreography.
Yeah, yeah.
Shows in Seattle, I remember going to see Sinner Saint, and
mm-hmm.
they would do a four-week run of a show, and while they were doing the four-week run, they'd be rehearsing their next four-week run. People in New York don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
Shows don't pay as well.
And we don't have the extended runs because we don't have the space for it.
Exactly. Now, one thing that is happening in Los Angeles is that there are more shows now than ever. There's a huge mm-hmm. amount of shows every night. And I think that might also be a bit of a New York influence.
Mm, interesting.
5-6 years ago, you would not see shows in like every little tiny bar.
Right.
And now there's gotten to be enough performers that they're breaking out and doing shows in every little tiny bar. Every dark little corner
mm-hmm.
of a place where before a performer would say, no, I'm not going to do that place. There's no stage or there's no lighting or I can't do a tech.
Do you think that the film tradition in LA has any effect on the burlesque scene? Because I know we have such a performance art theater scene here, mm-hmm. and that definitely influenced at least when I started,
mm-hmm.
The people who were coming right out of that and into what wasn't even called burlesque necessarily at that point. Is there a sort of similar thing with that, with the film tradition in
LA? Absolutely. And I would go beyond film and just say all of entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
It is an industry town. It seriously is. And I remember Rita Dalbert, one of the producers of The Velvet Hammer, who now produces Lucha Vavoom,
mm-hmm.
we're asking her about production value in LA, and she said that's what you do.
Yeah.
Like if you're, and you can't help but take up through osmosis. If you live in Detroit, you're surrounded by car industry. You're gonna know something about the car industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're gonna be living in Manhattan, you're gonna know something about, you know, the fashion industry or mm-hmm. something like that. If you're in Los Angeles, basically you know the entertainment industry because you know people who are in it.
Right.
And it's going to affect you. And if you want to put on a show, if you need somebody who can build you a prop,
mm-hmm.
you have professionals. If you need a costume made, you have professionals. We do have the swing and rockabilly tradition,
right.
too. So there are the live bands there. New Orleans still has a great tradition for live bands.
Definitely.
And it's happening in New York a little bit. If you go see anything that Ronnie Magri does, because
mm-hmm.
he's from New Orleans. He's got a great band. Fisherman, when he lived here, was great. And now if you see Champagne Riot shows, they're all live band stuff.
Yeah.
I'd love to really see that live band burlesque aesthetic happen again. Of course, it depends on the venues.
Tell me about the second act performance that you would bring when we throw everything on the lifeboat.
Well, I want to have somebody who is spectacular, but also who's a really close friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you just can't go wrong with Pearl Noir. If you said, you know, five people to choose,
mm-hmm.
I was considering five Pearl Noirs who would be that good.
I just think sitting around naked on the beach with her for eternity.
I am all for that. Yeah. And I think she'd be really happy dancing on the sand barefoot.
Yes, she
would.
Would
be one of her things.
Mm-hmm.
Never disappoints.
Never.
Always knocks it out of the
never.
Park. Always a great show. Yeah, she and I have always been close for years. She
mm-hmm.
was really close friends with my wife, Diane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be something that she would actually want to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, like just everything about her is fantastic. Any number she would want to do.
If you had to pick one.
I would specifically not ask for one
mm-hmm.
because one of the best performances I've ever seen Pearl do was at Hotel Chantel.
Yep.
And she was headlining.
Mm-hmm.
She closed the show. And something was wrong with her music.
Uh-huh.
But Pearl's like, no, just play whatever. So she just played something randomly. And I forget what it was, but it was awful. It was a horrible song. And Pearl just hit a home run. Like grand slam.
Mm-hmm.
Just knocked out of the park. I don't even remember what the song was. But she nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
Just improv. Just all right, this is my song. I'm going to do it. 'Cause she's that good.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It really was one of the best things. And I can't remember exactly what she did or what the song was, but what I do remember is she held that audience in the palm of her hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She can work a crowd no matter what the crowd is, and you can be front row right next to her and see all these little subtle things she
mm-hmm.
does. Or you can be up in the balcony in the cheap seats and she can still work the whole stage.
Yeah.
And
she's still looking
phenomenal.
Right at you somehow.
Oh, yeah. It's terrific.
Just inspiring.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I always love when performers can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That I've seen Pearl do like a 12-minute number
mm-hmm.
and every bit of it was entertaining.
Yeah.
And she worked off of the band. The band worked off of her. It's a two-way
That's
street.
Delightful.
And it ends like at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they've rehearsed it for years or something. It's just
mm-hmm.
that good.
So you mentioned the jazz age scene
yes.
New York. And and it's, I mean, besides knowing you for your photography in the burlesque world, and I think a lot of us also know you as the person to ask about the vintage cocktails, and I've never seen you in, I assume that you don't own sweatpants, and, you know, you always are between the cocktails and the fashion and music, and it's a very wonderful influence. And how did you fall into that? How did that come to you? And what does it mean to you as a...
Well, first of all, I do own sweatpants because there's actually a gym on my street where I go to when I can.
Gym pants
and jeans
are different.
And things like that.
Totally.
But no, my work day is in, you know, jeans or khakis or something
True.
Like that. So when I get home, I want to... This is an old LA thing, being in the film industry. When I got home, I would go hang out with my friends. Mm-hmm. So we would come home from work, we would dress up and go out, you know, dancing or for cocktails or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the guys who was in the swing dance scene somewhat, yeah, in the 90s in LA, would dance at the Derby and stuff like that. And when I was in LA, Penny Star Jr., mm-hmm, she wanted to have a German cabaret, mm-hmm, you know, do something along those lines, because nobody else was doing it. Mm-hmm. And our thing has always been, if it's something we want to go to or do and nobody's doing it, let's do it ourselves.
Yep.
We hate doing it ourselves.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd rather just show up. Yep. You know, it's a lot of work, especially, mm-hmm, for a hobby. And we were talking to Dr. Vaj Davis, who was in the Velvet Hammer at the time, mm-hmm, who is brilliant. And he said, oh, I'm starting up a weekly club, and it's going to be called Brick Tops, based on Brick Tops Club from Paris. Now, nobody remembers Brick Tops, but Ada Brick Top Smith was like, she ran the Paris nightclub,
yeah,
scene. So Brick Tops was named after the original Brick Top, and it was a Friday night club that Vaj did in drag as Brick Top.
Oh.
And Augusta thought, well, I was going to do Club Schmutzig, but forget it, we can just go to Brick Top. And mm-hmm, we were there almost every Friday for 5 years, and got to see some of the best of Los Angeles burlesque and cabaret and jazz age type stuff, but with a very modern twist.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like they updated a German cabaret. It was more like if you took Studio 54 and put it back in the 20s. Like, you just took it back there. There were a lot of people from the factory who would, mm-hmm, come out and perform. That's how I got to know so many amazing musicians and performers that I had been a fan of when, mm-hmm, I was growing up. They would come to Brick Tops, and I've gotten to know them since then because of Brick Tops.
That's so, yeah, amazing.
And every week was a different loose theme.
Oh.
One time it might be like German cabaret. The next week it might be just Marlene Dietrich. Mm-hmm. The next it might be like early Judy Garland. Who knows? What, you know, it was just a different thing. And I kind of took my cues from that, mm-hmm, when I moved to New York. When I moved to New York, I was looking for a jazz age club. And there really wasn't one.
Yeah.
It was kind of frustrating. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe I'll do one, but I'm just too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember seeing online that New York University was going to do a retrospective of clubs, like nightlife culture.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they were going to do was Brick Tops in Manhattan, where they were going to recreate Brick Tops. So it wasn't Brick Tops Parisian nightclub. It was, mm-hmm, the LA club that I had been going to.
Oh, interesting.
And it was really strange that suddenly this, my life, things, right, that I've been doing are now being taught at a university level.
You're in a museum.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in a museum, pretty much. And they were bringing Vaj Davis and Ron Athey and Juliette Esmuse,
mm-hmm,
who I knew. And thought, well, I'm going to go see this. And I went and took some pictures and hung out with Vaj. And one of the students who was in charge of curating this was Jin Minsky.
Oh.
And she was there with her housemate, Diane, who I eventually married.
Okay.
So I got to be friends with Jin Minsky. And Jin and I would go see burlesque shows and talk about jazz age clubs. Mm-hmm. And still nobody else is really doing it. And then I got an email from my friend Shen,
mm-hmm,
who I knew from Los Angeles, and she would come to Brick Tops. Mm-hmm. And she said, is there anything like Brick Tops in New York? And I said, no. And she said, well, I'm going to start my own. Hmm. And I thought, fantastic.
Finally.
Finally. She was going to start a club called Dances of Vice.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I put Shen and Jin Minsky in touch.
Yep.
So we helped spread the word, basically. Mm-hmm. It's really all Shen's show, but we helped spread the word and get people to come to the first shows. And it was great because it was at the strip club, Pussycat Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
On the second
floor.
Which is,
I think, one of the first places I ever saw anything.
Yeah, it's gone now, but it was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a big mix of people. And so she created this whole scene, and that's where Diane and I really started, I guess, courting each other and, mm-hmm, got to be, you know, a couple. And eventually, Shen decided to break out into other things,
mm-hmm,
and took Dances of Ice in some directions that were just
brilliant, mm-hmm. absolutely brilliant. She did bigger festivals. She did like Baroque nights. Yeah. She did like 1980s nights, 1970s nights. She's done some rockabilly stuff. And around that time that she was starting to take dance's advice in different directions, Diane and I were thinking, well, we still love going to dance's advice, but we missed when it was just a little jazz age mm-hmm. speakeasy. Mm-hmm. And we talked to Shen about, well, we've been thinking about starting our own, you know, would you be, you know, would you mind this? And she was like, of course not. It'd be great. So we started doing Wits End, mm-hmm. which was going to be a regular club. And it would be a different band each month. And it would be on the Bricktop style of a different theme mm-hmm. each month. And we started doing that. And our first band that we had was Grandpa Musselman and mm-hmm. his syncopators. And the singer was Shen Lee. So Shen was our first singer at Wits End. I'm very proud that Shen.
That's really cool.
Yeah, she was terrific. So that was the first one. That was a little over 6 years ago. We just had our fifth anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah. I think after 5 years, we pretty much have our own Wits End Jazz Age community that I'd like to think that we helped influence that a little bit, in that when we started, there wasn't as much of a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And people were competing for the crowd, because it was a small crowd.
Yep.
And also the bands, there were very few bands to choose from. And now we have bands, you know, calling us, and a lot of the bands are under 30. Many of them are under 25.
Huh.
And those kids know their stuff. Not just the how to play it.
Yeah.
But the history of everything. They know who recorded what on what date and what the B-side is and all this stuff. It's it's kind of like punk rock to them.
Yeah.
And some of these kids are phenomenal. Yeah. I also do the Zelda magazine, and one of my favorite things was interviewing people around the country who are under 25, who are up-and-coming musicians in the jazz age scene. And they're going to be the huge names 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And they're just unbelievable. There is a scene now, and mm-hmm. it's become more than just the locals in New York. It's become global. There's people who come out from all over the world to go to the lawn party, who come out to go to Wits End, and you know, I can't deny that a lot of pop culture has kind of fed into it,
and vice versa.
Like the Gatsby movie, which came out, mm-hmm. Boardwalk Empire,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. We got in on it early, I would say.
Yep.
So we're definitely benefiting it from it. I remember talking to some people who were in a band, and they were complaining a little bit about the Gatsby movie, mm-hmm. about some stuff was not accurate. I remember talking to Jesse Gelber, and he's like, I'm just thinking about my bank account and all the weddings I'm going to be performing all the Gatsby stuff. It's just like, it's, and I personally, I like the movie. But I know some people have been sticklers for certain things, just like they're sticklers for, you know, stuff when we do Wits End and mm-hmm. people show up in modern garb. You know, not everybody's gonna like everything, but if it brings, you know, every 20 people who become fans of the movie and get into the Jazz Age stuff, if two or three of them stick with it,
that's great.
That's more for the community. Yep, it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything helps. Yeah.
So your last choice for your Desert Island Strips was actually a toss-up. And I'm going to allow this because both of these performers are absolutely amazing and inspiring. Or you can pick one, whatever. But you had two folks for your...
Okay. I'll mention both of them, and we can let the audience phone in and decide. Yeah, Michelle L'Amour and Indigo Blue.
Yep. I wouldn't want to pick...
No, so, it's like it's a hard like toss of a coin.
Yep.
Because you know, if I can't have both of them, mm-hmm. it's just really really all hard.
Right. So then I am going to say this: if you have to, if I'm letting you have both, which act of either of those performers would you ask them to throw on?
That's a difficult question my favorite number that Michelle does recently involves a big prop. It's her cage number.
That's okay. It's a magic raft.
If it happened to be on the ship. I kind of like the idea that it's a shipwreck and then you have to build your props and costumes out of what's from the ship.
And I feel like maybe even that particular prop could be pretty mm-hmm. well built out of maybe some bamboo and...
and everybody gets some sailcloth and maybe there's a chest of treasure or something like that. Or there was a big vaudeville trunk that happened to be on
it's a big ship.
Of course, yes. It's all become Swiss Family Robinson mm-hmm. burlesque.
I have to say, full disclosure, that that particular act of Michelle's would probably be on my list.
Too. Okay, cool.
So it's sort of amazing.
It has... I know it's amazing, and I have a hard time disassociating myself from my personal feelings for it, mm-hmm. because one of the things she does is she uses music that Diane had actually recommended mm-hmm. to her. And I remember watching that in the crowd with Diane. Diane's like, oh my God, that's the music I mentioned. She mm-hmm. would become so proud of things if she could one-up me. She was very competitive with me. Uh-huh. And if she could one-up me in something that I was known for, like burlesque, yeah. she was thrilled. And I loved watching fantastic. Her be happy about that. But she was so happy that there was that music. And that number is just
it's
phenomenal. Michelle does stuff that is not just that her body is amazing, but she does something similar to Indigo in that if you watch her eyes, she mm-hmm. makes that connection with the crowd. And she becomes a panther. She's very animalistic in that number. It's a really raw, raunchy number. And not necessarily because of any like overt acts that she does. Like you can take a still from that and there's action. Mm-hmm. In that number. There's movement in that number. Just from looking at a still, you can see that kind of
yeah.
power that she's got behind that. It's a phenomenal piece.
It's incredible.
It really is. Almost everything I've seen that she's done is just
yeah.
fantastic or yeah. creative. Even the minimalist stuff she's done is just really conceptual and beautiful. And Indigo, of course, is... She's Indigo Blue. And if you don't know who she is, then you need to spend...
You're probably dead.
Well, you need understand. To spend a week researching every single thing mm-hmm. she's done because it's worth it. You know, she teaches the Academy and everybody who comes out of the Academy, a little bit of her... rubs off on them. You can mm-hmm. kind of tell if somebody has gone through her classes yep. because A, they're good, and B, they're good in certain ways that other performers aren't mm-hmm. usually. They give good face. They connect with the audience.
Yep.
It's all about neck up
yeah.
actions. Yep. Yeah. Even though the like neck down, it can be a phenomenal performer, great dancer. You know, they can do trapeze or gymnastics or any kind of dance. There's a lot of performers who can do that, especially yep. in the West Coast. But from the neck up, the face, the lips, everything, expression is
yeah.
everything to
and
that
there's
crowd.
Just a total
yeah.
engagement. It's
oh
wonderful.
My God. And Indigo is a phenomenal performer.
Oh,
I mean, she is also a lovely, lovely person.
And she's a nut, too, which
yeah.
I love.
And I've known her so long that to me... Well, I'm going to say this about all three performers.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, to me, are really close family.
Yeah.
And I would do anything for them. It's not just about who do you think are the best performers in the
right.
world that you'd like to see live. Because for me, there's so
I mean,
many. They're great. That. These three are people that if any one of them called me tomorrow and
yeah.
said, hey, Don, I need something. Can you
yeah.
meet me in some town? I would go on Expedia and find a flight right away. And I would drop everything for you know,
mm-hmm.
any of these people.
Okay, so this is what I love that you picked as a creative person, but not a
yeah.
stage performer. You didn't have an act that you would bring of yours, but you had a mix of music that you said if you were forced to sit on a chair on stage and be embarrassed
oh, yes.
about that. But but your mix of music had some fantastic songs in there. A Duke Ellington piece, was it? Or was
Duke
it
Ellington.
Duke Ellington.
Duke Ellington. Love Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
The whole history of Duke Ellington for me is the history of jazz.
Mm.
We play a lot of Duke Ellington songs at Wit's End. And if you, the one I picked was Blue Pepper, which
mm.
I knew because it was the original Velvet Hammer theme.
Okay.
When they first started in the 90s and early 2000s, they would come out to Blue Pepper, or the band would play Blue Pepper
mm-hmm.
live. And it's like, what is this raunchy,
yeah.
badass burlesque song? It almost sounds like a Bernstein song.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, it's Ellington, you know, and not too many people know it. If you hear that song, I don't know if you've heard it or not.
I have, yeah.
it's, for me, it's always the Velvet Hammer theme.
Yeah.
And I don't know why every performer doesn't perform to it. It's Ellington, and it is a great, great burlesque number. Mm. And the Velvet Hammer used to do that until their band leader, who's the Millionaire, when Augusta was doing her documentary in the Velvet Hammer, she needed some original music, and she asked him to come up with a theme. So he wrote and recorded with the Velvet Hammer Band a song called Ass Tassels. So that became the theme to the Velvet Hammer documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And because the band knew it, when the Velvet Hammer started performing in 2002, 2003, after the documentary came out, that became their theme. And they would come out then to Ass Tassels.
That's
fantastic. Which is also another... That's my second song I picked.
Yep.
So I would say Blue Pepper and then Ass Tassels, which were the first and second Velvet Hammer mm-hmm. themes, mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
Because that's my history with the Velvet Hammer. That covers everything. And also, knockout songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last song I picked was Caravan.
Ugh.
I love Caravan, and the great thing about Caravan is it never has to end.
Yeah.
So I can be on stage as long as the performers, and if you have performers like I was talking about, like Pearl Moore,
who can
perform
just let her go.
Forever. Let her go.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could just be part of that.
Yeah.
And Caravan can go on probably for years.
Yep.
Actually, Caravan comes from a joke that Augusta wanted to record every version of Caravan she could find. There were too many. And I was talking to Polly Wood from Seattle, mm-hmm. and thought, wouldn't it be great to perform... She said, wouldn't it be great to perform Caravan, but just like a whole different... versions of it, because there's so many. Every band seems to cover Caravan, and there's salsa versions, there's ska versions, there's German cabaret versions, there's big bands, there's dance bands, there's swing, everything. I could be wrong about this, but I think it comes from, I think it was written by one of the guys in Ellington's orchestra.
Oh,
there's that connection. I could be wrong though, but it's a great song.
Yeah.
And Blue Pepper,
mm-hmm.
and then Ass Tassels and Caravan,
and then just a 24-hour loop of Caravan.
Oh my god, would just be until people get bored with it.
Yeah.
And if you're on a desert island, what else are you going to do?
Exactly.
So just dance around a caravan all day, and when you get bored with Caravan, put on a different version of Caravan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, so you get one performer flat out, doesn't matter what they bring, mm-hmm. what they do, and you mentioned her already, so who is that?
That would be Polly Wood, mm-hmm. actually, yeah. She's also one of my best friends mm-hmm. in the world. Absolutely love her and adore her. But separate from that, on stage,
mm-hmm.
she's somebody who just does not give a bad performance.
Yeah.
She can do anything. She can do... variety, basically. She can do incredibly sexy, sexual stuff, and she can do the goofy, you know, ironic, making fun of herself stuff.
Yeah.
She's a dancer, but mainly she's a theater person.
Mm-hmm.
So she's an actress, and she every time she's on stage, she's acting the part, which is why her name Polly Wood is really shows who she is.
Yep.
She's an actress,
mm-hmm.
and she's being a burlesque performer. So if you're going to have somebody who's kind of like a utility player who can do anything,
mm-hmm.
she's kind of like my go-to, I would say. And, because of being friends in our personal life,
mm-hmm.
For me, she can do no wrong.
Yeah.
She's great.
Well, okay then. I think as long as we rescue the cocktail chest and and maybe a box of costumes, and we'll build the rest, and... there'll be music and there'll be drinks and there'll be caravan and it'll be a nice
island. I say this sounds like a good plan. We should go charter a boat somewhere.
I say we should charter a boat and punch a hole in the bottom and see where we end up.
Absolutely. I'm all for that. I'd love to do that with you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Don. And thank you, Nessie. Welcome to the island.
Thank you very much.